Travelling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke.
Kia ora, Kirsten. How are you?
Kia ora, I am good. Happy Friday, everyone.
Happy Friday to you too. You're bringing us very Friday vibes today as well. We're talking reggae, and there's already a lot of very excited people on the text machine about this, Kirsten.
Oh, good. I mean, what a great genre. You know, like, we do some sort of, let's be honest, micro-genre on this
which
segment.
Which we also love, or we love to hate. It's, you know, all a good time.
But reggae, you know, has turned out to be a macro genre, really. You know, big as rock or hip-hop, in that it's got so many branches, it's lasted so many decades. And so imagine these kind of, you know, troubled young people in Jamaica creating this music that becomes global and, you know, a major part of sort of Anglophone, you know, UK mm-hmm. and US pop. I mean, that's just such a great story, you know, that these guys were, you know, literally kids, just, you know, angry about stuff, involved in gangs and stuff. They were, as they called them, rude boys, which was literally what they called them. And they create this music that just... you know, I guess the States is a hop, skip, and a jump away, and then somehow, you know, crosses the Caribbean Sea and ends up major. And then, of course, a large Jamaican population in the UK saw it, you know, be popular at its time in the early 70s, but then, you know, have a big major sort of revamp of it in the 80s as well. So, like, I mean, just it's a great genre story, I gotta say.
I'm gonna hit the first track, which I think will also hit people in the feels a little bit at the moment. Sing it up, mister. Hear what I say, sir, yeah. No, 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 yeah. Get your hands in the air, sir. Woo, yeah. Then you will get no hurt, mister. No, no, no. I said, yeah. Toots and the Maytals. Of course, Toots very sadly just passed away, which is a real shame. But what was Toots' kind of origin story in reggae?
Now, is this the Toots one?
Yeah, this is the Toots one. We got the Toots track.
Okay. 5446 was my number.
Yeah, it's the one.
Okay. Yeah, so he passed away a couple days ago. And they actually sort of, they released a single in 68 that was called Do the Reggae. So it sort of brought the word out. You know, they're that important. They sort of literally, not invented the word, but, you know, brought it out so people knew what it was called and what to call it. And so Toots himself was in jail for marijuana possession in the mid-60s. And this is about, you know, his prison number.
Mm.
And such a big song, it's been covered by you know, British reggae band Aswad, Yellow Man, Buju Banton, and even Vanilla Ice.
Nice. Wow. I did not know there was a Vanilla Ice cover of this.
What
track,
a legacy. It was still winning Grammys in the 2000s.
Far out.
You know, so just a really a long career. But you can really hear the shouting call and response here, very influenced by soul music and R&B. And that was what was important with reggae. Jamaica had some of its own styles. It had ska and rocksteady and mento, but they loved R&B and were so impressed sort of seeing African Americans on their television, you know, like Otis Redding and James Brown. And so they brought some of that R&B sort of soul influence into their music.
Right.
And that's where reggae sort of came, you know, it's sort of big mush of all their
So what was
influences.
What was the, like, sort of, I guess, like, era or, like, year that reggae kind of started to take off? Because it sort of feels like one of those genres that's just, like, always existed because it is so, you know, widespread in terms of who listens to it and how it's influenced other genres. It kind of feels like it's been around forever, but, you know, it must have come out of somewhere. What is the sort of, I guess, like, time period where it started to take off? Right.
This is the era. The stuff we're listening to today, this is when it started, like, hitting the States and the UK charts. This late 60s, early 70s was this big first burst period. I mean, obviously people were, you know, in the mid 60s, they were doing it at home, but this is when it started to get sort of international notice.
Right. And, okay.
You know, hit UK and US charts, you know.
The next track we've got is Jimmy Cliff, another classic. This is The Harder They Come. Now, what's Jimmy Cliff's story?
Well, I mean, he's had some huge hits, and he appeared in a movie about reggae or about Jamaica, and sort of, you know, he's the one that, you know, helped to get international appeal, too.
Right. If anybody was feeling like in a bad mood this morning, they'll be feeling much more cheerful after this, I have to say.
Absolutely.
Well, isn't it, like, interesting that a music can be cheerful and angry and political?
Totally.
And topical, like, at the same time? I mean, it's sort of magic.
Well, and reggae has always been, at its core, very political because it talks about all sorts of injustices and
yeah.
It kind of also lays out very much like just how life is in a snapshot of a moment, which is kind of a hard world, is often what is being portrayed in these tracks.
Absolutely. One of the things I forgot I wanted to say about Jimmy Cliff is that he wrote, he did covers and writing, you know, combo like other artists do, but he wrote Many Rivers to Cross, which is also just such a beautiful song.
Mm.
He's had heaps of other hits. You can get it if you really want. And
the influence of like reggae and other music genres is also really interesting. Where does it kind of, you're sort of talking about how ska and stuff all link into it, but where does it kind of like proliferate out into Kirsten?
Well, we get the 80s, the British sort of reggae in the 80s, you know, the UB40, Aswad, and that's where it becomes more electronic.
Right.
But then back in Jamaica, they're doing the electronic, but they're getting, you know, dancehall. they're like okay, taking it in a different direction. And then you get the sort of the U.S., Caribbean folks in like Cuba and stuff starting to do, you know, the harder sort of raga stuff like that. So it just keeps evolving. And then dub is another branch of it, sort of just the, you know, not the DJ, the selector, you know, the, you know, sort of playing with speeds and records and stuff. And it just keeps evolving and going. And but, you know, we see there's lots of populations like Māori and Aotearoa that sort of just picked it up, you know, and said, I hear what this music is doing and saying. I can understand the sort of joy and pain in the same song, the bittersweet.
Yeah.
And so the Pacific, Africa, a lot of people, especially indigenous people, have picked up on this music and used it's become their music,
yeah.
You know? Let's face it, New Zealand, it's our music.
I was reading, after Toots passed away, I was reading Audio Culture's very good article about herbs, and they have this mention in it about when Toots came to New Zealand and played a bunch of shows and then hung out with Herbs, and Herbs like had to really convince him that Pacific reggae was like true reggae, and eventually he came round on it. But it's quite interesting, those like different ways it kind of, you know, finds root in other places as well.
Well, yeah, and finding root is important too. You know, it's not appropriate cultural appropriation. You know, it's kind of taking the music at its authentic meaning,
totally,
and intention. Let's face it, Rastafarians. I mean, Jimmy Cliff was a Rastafarian, but most of the other artists were actual Rastafarians. There are groups of Māori that are actual Rastafarians. You know, so it's not like just picking up a musical style. It's embracing the whole philosophy.
This is Burning Spear with Marcus Garvey that we're listening to now. Someone's texted in to say reggae is medicine.
Oh, that's awesome. That's an awesome quote, actually. You gotta copyright that. Yeah, so Marcus Garvey was a big figure in the Rastafarian philosophy and music. He was a little problematic, I won't lie. When you look him up, you'll be like, oh, okay.
Okay.
You know, anti-Semitic, pro-KKK, because he believed in sort of the separation of... and keeping and going back to Africa rather than sort of Du Bois sort of, you know, integrating and coming together with the races. Yeah, it's a little problematic. But, you know, this song is iconic. So yeah, to be about Marcus Garvey, you know, it shows that this music is sort of, it's part preaching, part historian. You know, history, it's you know,
it's
telling
all, it's storytelling, isn't it? The whole, the kind,
yes,
of like a lot of the crux of it is storytelling, and maybe that's why it takes off in so many different cultures, is because everybody's got stories to tell, and this is like a very authentic way of telling them.
I've got one quote here, not maybe not as good as your medicine one, but that this song particularly was an intertwined message of faith and political radicalism. You know, sort of,
yeah,
how do you do those two things? I mean, that's where music is magic, and that it can sort of, in 3 minutes.
Yeah. Someone's made quite a good call in the texts as well about there being, I think maybe there is this like inauthentic line where you get that kind of white reggae vibe. Someone said The Police being one of those bands that I think gets a lot of shit. Probably fair enough, because they maybe do err on the appropriation side, because that is maybe not hitting the authentic mark. I don't know. That's my hot take on it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's the story we've seen with a lot of these genres. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm hitting this point every week. You know?
Must be a truth.
You know, we see white folks, oh, you know, fine, enjoy whatever music you like, love it, and perform it, but there is, you know, a lot of these musics have sort of deeper origins and,
yeah,
connections, and if you're not totally bringing that through. UB40 seems to be accepted, right?
Yeah, oh, I don't know. I'm definitely not enough of an expert, but yeah, maybe they sit more on the side of the fence.
You know, I guess
just
because most of the band is Jamaican. And you hear, you know, there's Caribbean folks all through American popular music, you know, like Rihanna, for instance. You know, so like it's there's reggae, but Jamaica and the Caribbean have just, their tentacles have just been so powerful in American popular culture and UK.
Totally. Think about all dance music basically that's come out of the UK kind of links back to parts of the Caribbean as well.
Yeah, but, yeah. So, you know, such a tough history, but such a huge impact, you know?
We have had a request. Someone said, can we do a New Zealand reggae segment at some point, which would be quite interesting, maybe to do a little aside, you know, sub-genre of a massive umbrella genre. There is so much to unpack. It's such a huge,
and especially
huge
Maori
thing.
Language Week, we could have done Orania and Ruia, who do, like, you know, Te Reo Bob Marley covers. They're awesome.
They are awesome. But this, I've enjoyed this very much. Reggae in the text is, you guys have definitely been enjoying it too. Reggae is medicine.
Yeah.
It's a lovely, lovely idea. And thank you very much, Kirsten. What will you be bringing us next week?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be as popular as reggae. We're going to do Vaporwave.
Ooh, there are definitely Vaporwave fans at BFM.
Oh, okay.
They do definitely exist. So that will be certainly very interesting. Well, we'll talk to you then. Ka kite anō. Have a lovely weekend.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Travelling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimpke.
Certainly.